Well, hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Resilient Campus Podcast. I am so thrilled that you're here. I hope that your week, your month, your start to the semester, or whatever time you're listening to this episode, I hope that it's been a time of rejuvenation for you, of learning, and just remembering to return to the basics, drinking water, spending time with people you love and like in order to fill your cup back up, and making sure that we are engaging in that self-work and that internal time that is only for us. And as we build community and we do movement building, making sure that we stay whole people. And so it's been a wild, wild week and a wild time in my life. I rejoined a campus recently as an interim director, and I also launched the Resilient Campus community on Patreon. So if you haven't checked that out, I will put the link in the show notes. We have a goal to get 50 supporters signed up, and we have 8 so far. So I think that is a phenomenal start. The human beings in this online space are just really, really amazing people. So look forward to connecting with that project and that online community, something that I've been thinking about and brainstorming for quite a while now in terms of how to bring social justice educators together into one space across geographic boundaries, and just using the technology that's available to us to make our lives easier and to build community with each other. So look forward to seeing you in there. In this episode with Erin Kate Escobar, I'm really excited for you to engage with Erin Kate. Erin Kate uses she, her, and they, them pronouns. And she shines light on the countless practices of her personal and professional resources and the strategies that she uses to change the world, as she phrases it, one human connection at a time. They highlight programs that they coordinate for STEM students that use what they call mentoring pods. So look forward to that discussion and that programmatic model that I think that some of you that are looking to retention practices or building deep relationships and personal growth and professional growth for the people in your organization that you're working with and for, that is a really cool model that I hope that informs the work that you're doing as well. Erin Kate discusses some of the foundational readings and the bodies of work that inform her approach to her work today. And, you know, I just think Erin Kate provides this tremendous body of guidance regarding finding our own community in this work, but also listening really closely to what Erin Kate shares about tips and tools for practicing that internal self-work as well. That is crucial to sustaining this movement building work. And also, I appreciate that it was uplifted several times throughout our interview. So there will be an abundance of tips and tools for you to glean in terms of that internal self-work and just making sure that you're centering and grounding and rejuvenating yourself as well in this work that is highly personal, takes a lot of energy towards others and our communities. So I love that that was a theme. A word about some of the content in today's interview. Erin Kate and I talked after the interview because there was mention of experiences of sexual harassment during our conversation. And I know that some people listen to this the first thing in the morning when you are in your mobile learning lab on the way to work or on the way to your morning destination. And so we will be talking about that topic. So if you're listening and that's something that today is a day where you can't engage in that topic for whatever the spectrum of reasons are in your personal experience, in your professional experience, then you'll want to pause the episode at the moment when I say the phrase wind up or wind down. And that is something that cues our last leg of conversation and interview questions with Erin Kate about guidance. So looking into the rearview mirror about what guidance and lessons that Erin Kate has learned. So if that's something that you just cannot do not want to engage in today in this way, then I would suggest that you pause it there and return to it later if you want, or return to it not at all. So I will get out of your way for now. I hope that you enjoy this episode, and I very much look forward to connecting with you soon. Welcome Welcome to the Resilient Campus Podcast, amplifying the voices of college inclusion innovators. I'm your host, Sabby Labor, founder and CEO of Resilient Campus. Join me each week as I interview professionals on the front lines of campus and community movement building. For more information, please visit resilientcampus.com/podcast. Episode number 27 of the Resilient Campus Podcast. Today we're speaking with Erin Kate Escobar. Erin Kate Escobar, she, her, they, them, holds a master's degree in higher education and student affairs from the University of Vermont. They provide leadership, outreach, policy, and programming support for campus-wide diversity initiatives. Her primary responsibilities at California Institute of Technology include the Women's Engagement Board, Women Mentoring Women, LGBTQ plus support, Safe Zone training, and facilitating workshops and trainings on topics of diversity, inclusion, and unconscious bias. Erin Kate, thanks so much for being with us today. How are you?
Cool. Thank you so much for having me on here. I'm doing excellent.
Amazing. So thanks for joining me. Those folks listening in, Erin Kate and I are talking on a Saturday, which I think is like a major sacrifice of that personal time. So thanks for, you know, giving the listeners some of that time and energy and brilliance on your behalf, because I know it's a long week. So thanks for being with us. Cool.
My pleasure.
So
I did have to start by saying my university made it very clear I'm not allowed to speak on behalf of them, and I'm not representing California Institute of Technology. It's just where I happen to work right now. But anything I say is on behalf of myself and not them.
Excellent. And I think that's one of the things that I've heard listeners say as well, is that they love hearing the personal side of people doing the work. And although doing the work formally for our institutions takes up, you know, much of our week, our weekend, our time, our energy, our, you know, human resource, that often the listeners are wanting to know that the people doing the work are humans just like them, and, you know, have successes and challenges that are personal. And so we talk about that blend. And I imagine institutions also have senses of nervousness around people speaking for them, in this day and age, of course, of social media and call out culture and all that. So thank you for that preface. And yes, we will hold that very closely as we go throughout our time together. So Erin Kate, you and I met, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, but I blame the dissertation on my lack of perception of time. And we got to hang out and know each other a little bit, but I would love for you to share, you know, introduce yourself. What do you want listeners to know about you today as they tune in and they want to know, you know, who is Erin Kate? What would you like them to know?
Yeah. I think we met at a Creating Change maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And gosh, I feel like that conference fits a lot of needs of mine, but I'm a genderqueer person of color, biracial, multi-ethnic human being. I'm also a millennial, so I feel like that plays a role in how I'm perceived by others and how I kind of move through the world. I have my master's in higher education and student affairs, and yet on a college campus, it seems like if I don't have a PhD or an EdD, I have to constantly remind myself I'm still worthy and I can still do my job really well. But I do think a lot about like how higher education does promote and want you to have more higher education.
Yes.
And I've also lately been super in tune with weight stigma and like diet culture and the way that that kind of infiltrates the way we just engage with people, engage with each other, and the way that just how we interact. I think I also feel pretty hyper aware of being like a U.S. citizen in this day and age, as I listen to the news and I have all kinds of feelings about what it means to have things done in my name, which isn't new to me because I'm also Jewish. So this idea of something being done in your name or created on your behalf or without you choosing it also feels really salient. But now it feels like, oh, that also applies to another part of who I am. And I continue to like decompartmentalize and allow myself to be this intersectional being who, you know, wants to move through the world every day with, I feel like, a bit of optimism, even in spaces where, you know, I feel like we're kind of on a Sisyphusian mission of pushing that rock up a hill. I also constantly remind myself that, you know, none of this work is done overnight, and who I am in the world and showing up every day means something too.
Absolutely. And you shared some of the identities that are salient for you as, you know, as we're talking about the saliency of U.S. citizen and how that's sort of, you know, one of those identities at this current social and political context that's being imposed, you know, very strongly in terms of what that means in dominant culture and creating fear for our community members who do not have U.S. citizenship and the racialized lens on that, right? And so you mentioned some of the identities that are salient for you today. What are some of those others that might be at the core of who you are that you want listeners to know that are tuning in today?
Other ideas, the core of who I am. I feel pretty strongly rooted in being a Californian. I am on the West Coast. I was born and raised in this state. And indigenous to it, so I'm part Chumash also, and that's indigenous to Southern California. And I recently moved to Southern California just about 4 years ago. So I've been in Los Angeles for about 4 years now, and I think that feels like a salient identity doing this work in Southern California in an industry town in the town of Hollywood, where these conversations are happening a lot. And also working at like a STEM institution, all science, technology, engineering, and math, definitely puts another lens on our work. And definitely, it's such a cool place to get to work in and get to connect with minds of like astrophysicists and NASA people and, my geology people, chemistry, like mechanical and civil engineering. When I ask my students or my staff or faculty what they study or what I'm looking them up online to find out more about them, I'm like, oh my gosh. Let me go find out what all these words mean. So I think also the identity of not having a STEM background feels particularly salient in terms of wanting to relate to and wanting to connect with and wanting to like build bridges, and also needing to learn the language to like be able to make those bridges of like how a mechanical engineering brain is thinking about the world and how my like social justice education background brain is thinking about the world, and really wanting the work that we do to be accessible to everyone. So bringing it back down to like really the essentials.
Wow. That's awesome. I mean, just thinking about building connections with people from a STEM background and, you know, and I just appreciate you sharing all that, just kind of trying to build common understanding and common language to even start to build those bridges and connections. Like, what words are you using? What are you studying 24 hours a day that I don't even know what that word is, right? Like,
yep.
Or that concept or that landmass that you're studying, that rock formation. That's awesome. So Erin Kate, tell us about some of the work that you are doing in this environment to innovate around social justice, equity, and inclusion in higher education space.
Sure. So the work that really drives me and what kind of like keeps me going is anything where people get to make those real human connections and learn about each other and learn about themselves in the process and build community. So I inherited a big mentoring program when I first got there. That's like one-on-one mentoring. And I kept that part of it. It's still one-on-one mentoring. And I added in another component where people can opt in to being in like a smaller group of five. So I'm calling them pods. And so they're mentoring pods, and they're based off of having somebody who's like an undergrad, a grad, a postdoc, and a staff. So trying to get like the spectrum of experiences more than like all having different backgrounds or all having, you know, or all being of the same, you know, interest, less interest based, more of like, let's make sure there's one of everybody on here to share your experience, because the topic each of those pods comes up with is I've kind of set up a curriculum, a 1 hour chunk of time that the leader of each of those pods, but get like a, you know, 1 hour facilitation training, then can kind of facilitate this curriculum I give them on a monthly basis. And so they're facilitating these conversations and exercises around resilience, mental agility, how are we organizing our time? How do we deal with stress? How do we develop our awarenesses for what boundaries we even need to set? And then how to practicing saying no. There's another one on communicating our science and how are we doing that? And what does that look like? Thinking about strategic use and consumption of social media and people's online presence. In the science community, it's actually a little bit looked down upon, to be really engaged in social media or to make your science accessible, because in some ways then you're not doing this high level science that, you know, other scientists are using. You're just kind of making things for the commoner, which it depends what your goal is in science, right? But at an R1 institution, the goal is really to propel and make more science. So sometimes I feel like, students and staff who are drawn to like, I want people to know what it is we're doing, and I want to break it down so that like anyone can understand it. They kind of get some pushback from like, well, that takes a lot of time. And where are you valuing? How are you valuing your time? So helping people figure out, and also like changing of the guard and how social media plays such a big role, and like how we communicate science plays such a big role in how it gets funded and who has access to it and who's coming in next. So a lot of folks really care about that, but trying to figure out the balance of what that looks like.
That is
and
really
how
cool.
Do I also gain respect in my field?
And Erin Kate, do you create like a curriculum for these mentoring pods so that they go through sort of topics with supplementary information, or do you find that these topics just emerge naturally within the pods with the humans that are in it?
Right. So those were the topics that were emerging naturally just in the larger group conversations I was having. And then I put them into a curriculum where they kind of do like a opening, you know, icebreaker exercise around it. And then they might read an article or read some small snippets or quotes around the topic. And then come back as a group and do like an exercise around it or just discuss around it. And then the closing is always like, what do I want to do with this information now? How can we hold each other accountable for what kind of step I want to take in whatever direction, or what kind of steps I need to take back from that direction towards, you know, really implementing what our conversation has brought to light today for me.
That is really cool. I love the idea of mentoring pods, because a mentoring program is definitely on my mind right now. And, you know, hearing about pods, like in, I think more transformative justice models or restorative justice, I hate to say I get them confused because I don't know enough about either one, but here in the community, like they are having conversations about doing pods for like sexual violence perpetrators and survivors to engage in that process. And so I've had very initial conversations about it. But this idea that you have like a support, you have a community of support around you that can be with you throughout this process, such as like, you know, an undergraduate navigating the education environment, or a graduate student and having that perspective. So that, I love that model that you're implementing. That's super cool.
Yeah. And it just makes such a big difference, because I think one-on-one, sometimes things can get awkward with your mentor, or I experience hearing a lot of feedback that's just like, oh, we just didn't click, or, you know, we met up once, but we haven't had time since. And the monthly basis one of a larger group is like, there's a little more momentum, and it's a little more like, oh, I don't have to like come prepared to my mentoring session. There's just like a come and we're going to have a discussion on this topic that you've been told about, and you don't have to bring anything.
That's super cool. I love that, because then it, you know, with the interpersonal things, if they don't click, then the likelihood is that they will probably click with someone else in that pod, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. And so, Erin Kate, tell us about some of the journey that has brought you to the work that you're doing today. What drove you in this direction towards doing inclusion and social justice work? Tell us a little bit about that pathway.
Sure. So I wanted to be a politician when I went into college. I was like, I'm going to learn politics and I'm going to change the world from a policy perspective. And so I studied political science and sociology, and I, you know, interned and everybody's office I could in Washington for when Mayor Gavin Newsom was mayor of San Francisco, for a supervisor on the board. I was just like, I just need to find the right place in politics that I'm going to make my change from. And after studying that and working in everybody's office, I was like, oh, heck no. They are not ready for me in politics. I don't know if being an intern, which is the bottom of the food chain, or being like a queer woman of color in these spaces. Like, I know they're not ready for me. Like, I need to come back in another decade. So in the meantime, I'd also been really shaped by 9/11 being something that happened in high school and Middle Eastern politics. So a big part of my study was on the Middle East and Middle East and American Middle Eastern relations. And I took Arabic in college, and I was I did a fellowship over at Jews and Palestinians doing intergroup dialogue work and transformative conflict transformation work in the Balkans for 5 weeks. So that fellowship really shaped being like, oh, I really want to dig into what it means to be an American Jew and socially justice minded and make change in this really, really sad, ongoing, awful conflict that's happening. So then I was like, okay, American politics isn't for me. I'll move to the Middle East and I'll work on something there. So I moved to Jordan after I graduated, and I traveled around Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, and Palestine. And after about 6 months, I was like, oh yeah, I'm a queer, non-binary person of color who really wants to go back to my country and not feel like a colonialist everywhere I go. And I was like, yeah, this is great. And there's a lot of great work happening here, but I just feel like another form of colonialism coming in. So I came back here and I worked in nonprofits. And after a couple years of working in nonprofits, I was like, oh, there's something here that I really like. And that's like the mentoring part, and that's the coaching of people part, and that's like the human to human interaction of like helping people get what they want. And I remembered really having that in college from a student affairs professional who had been like, don't you want to come do student affairs? And I was like, no, the ivory tower. You've already weeded out so many people. I need to go work with the people. And about 4 years later, I called him up and was like, so where did you go to school? What kind of degree did you get? And how do I get into student affairs? Because I'd really like to work in multicultural student services like you did.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so that's what sent me to the University of Vermont. And my goal was always to get to work in diversity and inclusion work. I just knew that that fed my soul in finding a space in like a dialogue group allowed me to like be my whole self for the first time in my life. And I didn't feel as compartmentalized as I did when I went into like every separate identity group that I identified with. But finally, I was in a space that was like, bring your whole self and let's talk about all of it. Which I think those other groups also can have, but we have to work a little bit harder at it. Much so, it was really, really beautiful how, like, in a, like I did a social justice training program or a social justice educators program, and that really like was my foundation of intergroup dialogue, working with people in conflict, talking about identity, feeding our identities, figuring out what makes us tick and why we are the way we are. And that definitely drives me every day in terms of like, yes, how do I create more spaces for people to get to experience that or know that it exists, or get to come talk to somebody where like they get to kind of like let down one of those guards.
I love that, because those are so core to the work that people are like having trouble engaging their campus communities in today, is like how to engage in conflict, how to stay respectfully in dialogue, how to deal with identities, experiences of difference. And it sounds like you, and I don't know if this is my network and a lot of people coming from the University of Vermont, but a lot of the folks that I talk to that are doing this work from that place of intergroup dialogue and some of the like communication models, some of the essential pieces of how we do this work day to day, They come from University of Vermont. I don't know if that's my network or if that's just like a thing in the field. So go University of Vermont, I guess, in your program. But I'm super grateful that you have those skills moving into the field, because I talk with colleagues day in and day out that they're just throwing their hands up. Like, I don't know what to do with free speech, and I don't know what to do with students just not wanting to engage with each other, and social media throwing its own layer of superficial type of, you know, sort of making us more inclined to this sort of call out culture that's happening. So kudos to you for mm-hmm. practicing and, you know, being interested in those skills, practicing them, refining them. And then it sounds like really bringing that work into how you're helping students and, you know, the professionals in mentoring relationships be able to build connections with each other. Cause that's really deep. Those relationships are deep relationships, which is quite amazing.
Yeah.
Or they can be, I should say, right?
Yeah.
They have the potential to be. however scientists define the level of relationships that, you know, that us non-STEM folks would be like, okay.
Absolutely. Cool. It has been fascinating how, I mean, just like every field in social sciences feels different from the other, but like people clump them together, like sociologists feel very different from psychologists. Like, Every division on campus has wanted to create their own group for themselves. So women in chemistry want their own group. Women in geo planetary sciences want their own group. Women in physics, math, and astronomy. Women in mechanical and civil engineering. When I first got there, there was just one women mentoring women group. And as I've been there now for 3 years, I kind of like let the roots. I'm like, yeah, let's plant seeds everywhere. You're right. This doesn't need to be centralized with one person in one place. Like, everyone gets their own group. And I've created like an engagement board where on a quarterly basis, the leadership's all invited to one place to like collaborate, and talk about dates or talk about common challenges, because we are facing a lot of the same challenges. I mean, sexism is everywhere, no matter where you're at. And microaggressions are happening in all of those fields.
Yeah.
But each of them feel very like, you know, my experience is different in my lab or in my work or based on how much people are allowed to get away with in our field or how ingrained, like some of the problematic behaviors are in science fields. So it's been really amazing to watch those groups, root themselves in each of their divisions and kind of make that change from the division specific level, whereas before it was like more centralized in my position. And I'm like, I can't do advocacy in 11 divisions, but you can. So let me give you the skills to be able to facilitate that and make that happen. And how do you make requests, and who do you need to know to make those requests, and what are the relationships we build that help us to ask for what it is we need? Or, you know, or bring issues to light that haven't been talked about before. So that's been really cool to see.
That is very cool. And it sounds like you're creating the structure where they may not communicate with each other naturally on a day-to-day basis, but by having this convening, then you're providing opportunity for them to see trends, share practices, and maybe not duplicate some programming or efforts that they're engaging in.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. So Erin Kate, I want to shift gears just a little bit of shifting gears about you and where you find community in this work with your identities. Just where do you find a sense of community in your life today?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like motorcycle going by. I feel like I find community both in like just the one-on-one humans who I've, you know, was in my student affairs program with. Some of those colleagues have stayed really close and are confidants. Some of them were like my past mentors and advisors, you know, of women's centers or of living women communities who I call up and troubleshoot with. And then some of it's like making sure I get to conferences that I get to keep learning at. So this year I went to the University of Michigan and did their intergroup relations program for 5 days. And that was just like soul infusing. and life-giving. So that was really amazing. There's, in California, we have the California Cross-Cultural Centers in Higher Education that happens both annually, and then there's a Northern and Southern California drive-in in Azcache. And that definitely gives me life just to get together with other folks who are working in diversity and inclusion on campuses and hearing the struggles and talking about what's going on and how do we support each other and how do we do this work in challenging times. That's amazing. And somebody just created like a regional Southern California Women's Center specific group too. And I kind of consider myself a Women's Center of one in some ways. So that was a really nice group to connect with, a local colleague. So that feels like that's partially what is kind of like a re-up infusion. And then with the joy of social media, I feel like I can follow really rad people like you. And I've been following like The Body Is Not an Apology and just rad people doing radical self-acceptance and how do we be humans in this world work, and lots of cats and lots of bunnies. to like fill my cup. And it's interesting because like I don't really post to Instagram and I don't really have very many like, I have a couple like friends who I talk to in person, but really most of my Instagram following is like radical healing justice and like queer tarot card creators and rad LGBTQ queer witches and just like people of color who have like found ways to push back, and that's just really inspiring. Even if I don't know them and I don't call them, like my in-between breaks is like this nice radical shift of like, oh yeah, I can like take a breath and ground myself. I can feel whole and I can know that like I'm either not in this alone and I have people who I can access, or it's okay. Like I don't need another person at this very moment. There's something I can do within myself to like recenter and feel like at peace and ready to engage.
Yeah. I mean, and that, I think that all sounds like important, essential work that I think people listening in are either snapping their fingers or they're saying, I'm taking a note that I may have done all those things except for the self-work this week. And that's an important reminder, because sometimes that falls last, or it just kind of falls off the plate at the end of the week. And so I appreciate you bringing that back up to the surface, because I think any one of those pieces could easily fall to the wayside, and we have to help each other be accountable and remember that and remind each other gently of that. So thank you for sharing all of those things and where you find community and how you recenter yourself and feel whole in this work. Because it takes a lot from us. You know, it takes a lot to do this work, a lot of life force, as I like to think about it. I don't know if that's like a geeky way to tap into my Star Wars inclinations. So, Erin Kate, I know that you've shared some of the curricular preparation and your engagements in like intergroup dialogue at the University of Michigan. What are some of those other resources like books or podcasts or, you know, I don't know, bodies of work that you refer to when that inform the way you approach your work? What are those things that you want to share with folks?
Yeah. I think the Social Justice Training Institute is a pretty big core pillar that I did as an undergrad that I would love to go back and do as an educator now. But I still have the booklet from when I did it as an undergrad, and I still access it really often to think about how do I help frame this and help people get to that place where they feel psychologically safe, emotionally safe, and also are ready, you know, and there's a challenge involved too. So I can't speak highly enough about that program being a pillar. I've been reading Adrienne Marie Brown, Emergent Strategy, and that's been giving me life. I've kind of looked at some of what she's talking about and tried to create exercises out of that around how do I help plant these seeds in other people so that they can see the agency that we can have, even in times when we feel like what's my option? You know, my option is to give up or to give up or to try and be shot down, you know? So, always trying to find ways to instill that agency and resilience and motivation. And there's another word I'm looking for that's not coming to me. The body is not an apology. Sonya Renee Taylor is giving me life right now. And I just started this book, but I'm really liking it. It's called Trauma Stewardship, and it's an everyday guide for caring for self while caring for others. And it's a pretty, it's a really good, like, deep dive into, like, how do we deal with, how do we process and not take in, but allow it to exist, like the trauma we're working with every day with our students, staff, friends, family. And I feel like social workers get more of this background in, like, how to deal with the trauma that's coming at them. And in student affairs, we have to kind of find that for ourselves, because we're not taught case management skills necessarily, or that, like, how do I not internalize the trauma or take personally what's happening on this large scale? That's personally affecting me, but I still want to, I still have to manage what's happening right now. So that book I've been kind of referring to and trying to figure out, yeah, like, how do I really ground myself in a place where I can be there for people experiencing trauma and process my own trauma and, like, not allow it to, like, take over and still feel like I can experience that and go grocery shopping and go for a walk and hang out with a friend and, you know, and do all the things I want to do, go camping and play in the woods and take a hike. And so it's, yeah, how do we make sure we get all the outlets that we need?
That's fantastic. And you're bringing something to light for me that I can't really place why it hasn't been a tangible epiphany until now, until you said those words about how social workers have preparation in handling trauma and how to do work that can be very personal. And these are my words, but doing work that is very personal and not taking it personally, I think, was one of the things that you mentioned, and how that might be the next wave of, you know, social, I would say student affairs preparation programs, infusing that into the curriculum to prepare future professionals in terms of how to navigate institutions that can traumatize and do traumatize and do cause harm sometimes on our community members. And it's like, okay, well, how do we not internalize that? How do we not take that on? How does it not burn us out? And social workers get that in their professional programs. And I wonder if that's, like, the next frontier of, you know, or again, I'm bringing in, I think maybe that was Star Trek, but bringing in the next wave of, like, preparation into the curriculum as these student affairs programs evolve and meet emerging needs.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Oh, I love that idea.
I love that you're reading Adrienne Marie Brown. I talk with so many people doing this work today. Even my colleagues who I share a hallway with currently, we just really nerd out on emergent strategy. And on a daily basis, and we're trying to figure out ways to translate those pieces of brilliance that Adrienne Marie Brown offers just on one page, I guess, into the work that we do on campuses. So I love that there's, like, a really dedicated group of fierce people that maybe don't have contact with each other yet. But maybe that's the next, maybe that's the next thing that I prioritize, is, like, let's get Adrienne Marie Brown fans doing social justice work in higher education together to do, like, some practical, you know, translation book club to the work we're doing each day.
I would love that. I mean, I think we could turn that book into its own curriculum.
Yes.
Of, like, worksheets and, like, processes and, like, ways that people could reflect on the questions. I mean, I guess that's what, like, a book group is, right? Like, you chat about, or that's what it could be turned into, a class.
Yeah. Right?
I think in non-traditional ways, because I love education, I love learning, but I'm not interested in, like, classroom teaching or those, or more traditional forms of it. So I'm like, how do we break it apart and turn it into something that's, like, people don't even know that they're getting it, but they're getting it.
Absolutely. Yes. I think of passive programming.
Yes.
Yes, that's subliminal messaging. That's what I like to think of passive programming. It's like, hey, while you're walking by this poster, why don't you learn a thing or two and just like have some questions when you leave there? No big deal. Not learning. Don't worry. We're not, you know, just some information.
And I love that.
In 100% transparency, I have never been a part of a book club. I don't know what it means to be in a book club. I've just like heard people say I'm in a book club and I'm like, cool. I think I know what that means, but I don't know.
I am right there with you. I hear of other people in them, and I've heard of like more functional ones and more dysfunctional ones. Uh-huh. So I feel like just like any group, you know, it can meet as often and be as, you know, in depth, or it can be like, you know, a wine club with books on the side.
Right. Yeah. The books are just kind of an addition that we may get time for after the wine drinking.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, cool. I love, yeah, we'll define that together. Like, we'll each have our individual definitions of book club until we participate in one.
I love that. It. I think we could get some sort of radical, student affairs book club going.
Yeah, I agree. So, Erin Kate, as we kind of wind up to wind down, I guess is how I think of these next two questions. I really want to center you looking into the rearview mirror, right? So what has been one of the biggest or most significant lessons that you've learned in your professional life? And then kind of correspondingly, what's some guidance that you would give to other folks that are doing this work so that they can sustain their work as well? So two big wind up to wind down questions.
Yeah, I think rearview mirror, what I learned is that every time I try to run away from something because I don't think I'm ready for it or it doesn't think it's ready for me, it shows up in the next place in a different form. So I think, and I call it running away from, but really it's trying different things. But, you know, I think about how I left the nonprofit world for student affairs and to do this learning, but I didn't know how to stop the sexual harassment that was happening on a daily basis. And I thought, I can't report this and I can't do anything about it. I need to get out of here. So I'm going to exit. And I'm going to exit in a really nice way, and that's going to be grad school. And that now in my position, I'm also a non-clinical confidential resource. So every day I have people coming to my office, not every day, pretty often I have people coming to my office to talk to me about harassment and assault and sexual violence that's happening, or just, I'd say, violent communication that's happening in their workspaces. And I just think it's so interesting. Here I went running away from this job and into student affairs. And I was like, oh no, I can't, I don't know how to deal with this. I don't want to, with all the thought process that comes with, I don't want to ruin this other person's life. And maybe I'm partially responsible and all these pieces that now on, you know, I work with people on, and I've done a lot of reading on, and I've done a lot of work on, and I work with individuals on. So I just think, fascinating what the world gives us, but the pieces are like, you know, trying to run away from politics because I'm too much of a queer mixed race person of color for that, to be like, oh, now I'm a queer mixed race person of color for my job. I found it showed up again. It doesn't go away. It comes right back around. So for anyone who's like facing those things in their spaces around I'm not enough, or what our challenges or walls we're coming up against, to know that, like, I don't know, the universe is going to find a way for us to, like, work through it. And I think there's a lot of healing in it, but I think there's also a lot of, like, oh, yeah, we can't escape any of these things we're working on. We just have to, we can't go around them. We can temporarily, but I think they come back for us. So that's been this really big piece of, yeah, how do I, in the now, how do I ground myself and feel whole and make sure that I like to go running in the mountains or swimming on my lunch break or grocery shopping. I love grocery shopping as my de-stress. So like I love to go roam aisles after work if I need to. I'm like, yeah, I just want to hang out in the canned aisle section and like pick up a few things I don't know I needed in my cupboard.
I love knowing that.
Grocery shopping, or like, I've never seen this vegetable before. I should try to cook something with this. I love cooking. So it's like making time to look at recipes and try something new and spend time with people I love, my partner, our cat, friends. But definitely like finding those ways to escape. Actually, another huge resource to me was, that I actually did when I was unemployed and looking for work was The Artist Way. And it's a 12-week, like, how do you bring creativity back into your life? And one of the biggest takeaways from that was, taking yourself on artist dates and alone time. Not something I definitely struggled with, being alone for many hours of the day, but reframing it as this opportunity to like date myself and see how that feels and infuse, like, how can I allow this to be a creative time and space instead of like a, oh gosh, why is nobody with me? I'm all alone here. Nobody's going to find me. why can somebody else enjoy this experience with me, but just getting to take it in for myself? So I think finding ways to continuously date myself and reach for what is it that drives me and how do I get to be my best self, whatever that looks like on a daily basis. That doesn't mean being a perky, happy person every day necessarily. It just means like, this is who I am in this moment. Can I be authentic to it? And also, what would help me to be who I know I want to be in this time and space? So that's really making sure to get that. For me, that's like movement and human connection. As often as I can. And that time for self-reflection and self-care on my own time, whether that's journaling or doing a program or meeting up with a friend for a walk or listening to a podcast, any of those things.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all that. I love that even as you're looking in the rearview mirror, it is interconnected to the self-work that you've noted is of top importance for you in order to ground and be whole and restore, you know, yourself on a daily basis. And then, that's also connected to the lessons that you've learned. And Erin Kate, I know that, that you mentioned something, to myself and the listeners about experiencing sexual harassment in, and I just want to say that I think that one, I'm sorry to hear that that was your experience and that happened to you. And we don't often talk in the field about what it means to do this work and have those experiences within the systems that we are trying to work within and how that is a very particular experience in which there is currently, to my knowledge, not enough advocacy and support and dialogue and awareness around what that means, you know, to be a person charged with doing the work or one of the few people charged with doing the work in a system that is also causing harm on us. So I want to, you know, I wanted to pause there not to cause any feelings of dwelling on it. One of the things that I want to do is just note that I think sometimes we share those experiences and because they're so prevalent that we kind of move on to the next thing. And I just want to pause it and be like, no, that's not okay.
You know,
and thank you for sharing it with us because I know that people offline tell me about these experiences, and they are prevalent and we do need to address them. And like, part of it is that I hear people saying, well, you know, it's how systemic sexism and transphobia and homophobia and racism show up in the institutions. And I'm like, yes. And like, what are we, you know, what do we do about it to prevent us from burning out, to prevent us from being harmed? I guess I think in irreversible ways that, cause we need to do the work and, but also we need to be well. It's like, so I don't want to, I think about that frequently. And so I just want to, note to listeners who are listening in as well that, you know, if you're interested in engaging these conversations, that I think that we should convene around that and make sure that we're supporting each other in these experiences, because I don't think because they're systemic that we should just move on to the next. Sometimes I think it's like, let's pause and say it happened and say that it's terrible and that it shouldn't happen. And,
yeah.
Yeah. So
thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. And I know that you're a wonderful human being. When I met you at, and I feel like we were in a cold weather place. Like, were we in Chicago?
Might have been. Yeah.
Okay. Because yeah, I remember we were like freezing our buns off. I just remember that, like all the jackets and the wind. So I'm thinking Chicago. I'm like, it's a windy place there. It's a lot of skyscrapers and, you know. And I just remember meeting you and feeling like, wow, this person is so authentically humble and grounded. And so now hearing about all the ways in which you do your work, you center, you know, creativity, spending time with yourself, dating yourself, you know, finding restoration, it makes total sense with the person I met, you know, a couple of years ago at this conference. And just, I just appreciated being around you. So I'm grateful that you're doing the work. And like, I'm smiling right now, because I remember just, you make me smile.
Oh, that means the world to me. That's very, very kind. And that feeling is totally mutual. I was like, how do I figure out how to work with this person? With this savvy labor. And now I have like your postcard up on my on my bulletin board that you send out. And I'm like, I'm so glad you're out there visiting campuses and bringing the work that you're doing so many places. It's incredible. I hope one of these days I will get to recross the paths in person.
I would love that. I think we should dream up some ways to do that work. And maybe it is this Adrienne Marie Brown group that we're talking about, you know? Who knows? But I guess stay tuned. I'm a big fan of sleeping on big decisions and letting those things marinate. So I think we should revisit it. Awesome. So Erin Kate, we've talked about how we're connected. How can other folks listening in connect with you and add you to their network?
Sure. So I need to work on my own social media presence, but for now I have a Facebook account and that my first name's Erin and my last name's Kate, even though they're both my first name. Facebook's evil name policy came for me. Uh-huh. So yeah, you can find me on Facebook as Erin Kate with a first and last name. And then I'm on LinkedIn, Erin Kate Escobar, and I'm not on the Twitter or the Twitter yet, out there tweeting. And like I said, my social media, I don't actually, my like Instagram, I don't post on. I'm just a voyeur in the Instagram world. So
sure.
Maybe as things grow and change, that'll change. But for now, the Facebook.
That's wonderful. And so for folks listening in, I will link Erin Kate's Facebook, the URL for that, and the LinkedIn profile for Erin Kate as well. And that will be on resilientcampus.com/27. And so those will be the show notes page. So you can find those easily, whether you're driving, jogging, having a quiet moment in your office or cubicle right now. You can check those out later, and that will be easy for you to find for any episode, just / in the episode number. So Erin Kate, thank you endlessly, a million times over, for being with us today. I really enjoyed our time together, and I know that folks listening in are going to get so much from just listening to the 30-second snippets of, if that's what they have in their day to make time for. I think that they will gain so much even from the tiniest glimpses of our conversation. So thank you. I really appreciate your time and your energy. It's just been great.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. What an honor. Thank you for being my first podcast ever.
Yes, I'm sure it won't be the last. So Erin Kate actually provided an inspirational quote to close us out for today, to send you all back out into that world that we all live in. And the quote comes from Jamal T. Lewis. And the quote says, "Confidence is not a destination. It's an ongoing journey into our most vulnerable, unexplored self." To all those listening in, thank you so much for all that you do. I truly appreciate you. Stay resilient. Thanks so much for tuning in. Head on over to iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss out on a single episode.